Tandeham Shri Guru Shriyatah Paritamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagraja Tam Sagana Raghunatam Kitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sabadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhavitamscha. Congratulations to all of you for coming to this place to preach. Srila Prabhupada said it requires a divine spirit to go to some place to preach. And actually it's very nice to have a small center. It has its own challenges also, but later on when things develop, then there's more headaches and money and so many different things you have to see to. Small is sweet even. So the whole mood changes when there's lots of money floating around. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. All the money in the world should be used for Krishna's service, but when you have no prestige or position, and the only thing you have to do is to struggle for Krishna, for Prabhupada's mission, then things are sweet. Even Srila Prabhupada in the early days in New York, the devotees there think that it was, those times were very sweet compared to later. So of course, we want that the movement spread. We don't want that Prabhupada would have stayed forever with a few devotees. But it has its own sweetness. And you can be sure that despite all the struggles which are there, that Krishna is pleased. And actually, if you just go on doing this all your life, then surely you'll go back to Godhead. That means you have to stay brahmachari, I guess, because grihasthas, they have so many entanglements. Generally, they can't dedicate themselves fully in the way that brahmacharis can. So, yeah, better stay brahmachari. Philosophically speaking, there doesn't seem to be much reason to get married at all. Although the urge of the senses are there. Urges, many urges of the senses are there. The main one being, of course, the sexual desire. There are so many desires. But as Srila Prabhupada often pointed out, the main attraction in material life. Well, the Prabhupada did Shastra. Pungsastriya mituni bhavametam tayoraho hridya granthimahu. Aho griha kshetra sutapta vitaya janasya moho yamahamameti. The attraction between male and female is the basic principle of material existence, from which develop attraction or attachment to home, children, relatives, country, wealth, and so on. And in this way, we are bewildered thinking in terms of I, me, and mine, separately from Krishna. To think in terms of I, me, and mine in relationship with Krishna, that's very good. Ami tu toma, tumi to ama, ki kaja, apa, adhana. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I am yours, yours are mine, and then what do I have to do with anyone else's wealth or anything else? So Maya is like that, the attraction between male and female. It doesn't make any sense. If you try to think about it intelligently, then we'll see. What is it? There's as we're all males here, I'll speak of, the female body seems very attractive. But if you think what it is, it's blood, stool, bones, hairs, skin. The ingredients are not very nice. We just take the skin of the most beautiful woman in the world, take the body out, offer the skin. You want to touch? It's no longer attractive. It just seems attractive. It's the power of Maya. Maya makes a fool out of all of us by this attraction. And then this prestige, power, money, it all stems from the sexual attraction. Big buildings, big different. When a country gets some money, they want to build a big building. Malaysia, they got some money, they built the tallest building in the world, even though they couldn't find anyone. They built so many offices, the offices were all empty because there wasn't any need for it. But they just built a huge tall building just to show. And then what happens? One country builds the tallest building, then someone else builds the next one like 3 meters higher, something like that. Like this. Just for prestige. In Dubai, it was a nothing kind of place. So many buildings coming up. All just to show we're so great. We're wealthy. It ultimately comes down to the sexual attraction, which is an absurd attraction between, well, it's not, it's manasijam. It's born of the mind. There's nothing really there. That's why it doesn't satisfy, because there's nothing there actually. It's just manasijam. You know this word manasijam? Which verse does that come in? Yanmaitunadi, very good. Yanmaitunadi grihamedhi sukham hitucham. Kandu yanena kariyori vadukadu kam tripyanti neha. Kripana bahudu kabhaja. Then what's the last line? Vishahetadira. I'm forgetting myself. The last line says one should tripyanti neha kripana. Yeah, that we already said. Then the last line, Vishahetadira. Kandutivat manasijang vishahetadira. Prahlad Maharaj, speaking as a 5-year-old boy before he had any facility to investigate personally all these matters, said that, it's in another of Prabhupada's often quoted verses, that the happiness of family life begins with sexual attraction. Same thing that's said in that other verse quoted. That it all begins with sexual attraction, but it is insignificant. It is like the pleasure of scratching when you have an itch. It's a good example, isn't it? Because you feel some urge to scratch and you scratch it and you feel some relief. But then it just comes back with more pain and it makes this problem worse. So that's like that with sexual attraction. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj says one should be dhira, steady in mind, and tolerate that itch. If you don't scratch, gradually it'll go away, that itching sensation. So tolerate that, understanding it to be manasijam. It's simply born of the mind. It's a mental demand. It's not a demand of the soul for sexual gratification. Another term that Prahlad Maharaj uses for material happiness, shuti sukh. We've heard about it from others. Other people say that, yes, it's very good. You enjoy, just like in the advertisements. Buy this, buy that. So we hear and we're convinced. We think, yes, I should be happy like this. But it's not actual happiness. It's just advertised as happiness. But in this godless age, not only in this age, but particularly in this godless age, it's promoted so much. Even a short time ago in India, most people understood, not only in India, in other parts of the world also, understood that sexual indulgence isn't very good. Well, particularly in India. Even people were grihasthas, but they understood it was a kind of bondage. Because in India, there was among the Hindu people, there was the idea that ultimately you have to go toward moksha. Of course, it was mostly an impersonal understanding. But it was understood that sexual attraction is there, but it's something, all right, it's there, but it's not something to be increased. Just, it's something to, like I say, something to be dealt with, but it's not very good actually. So it's good that even in this godless age where sexual attraction is being promoted more and more, that still some people like yourselves are coming forward to be godly in this godless age and be brahmacharis. Which is surprising if you consider that the whole culture is so godless. I mean, even when I came to India in the mid-1970s, it was, at that time it was unimaginable that they could, there'd be beauty contests. It was just not imaginable that there would be such a thing in India. It's just outside of the whole way of thinking. Now it's a common thing. People, they think it's normal. But it's actually very bad. So still, India, it's much easier to be a brahmachari here. Still, the culture is accepting of that. In the West, it's very difficult, actually. And everywhere it's difficult, because Maya is making it difficult. But in the West, there's no supportive culture for that. Still, to some extent, people understand. To a very slight extent, some people understand. Last year, no, actually it was this year, in one airport in America, there we had to, some security thing, we had to show some paper, something like that, show our boarding passes. And on one side there was a man, one side the woman, so we went to one side, and the woman on the other side, she said, not in a bad way, in a respectful way, she said, yes, yes, I understand. They're monks. They're not supposed to deal with women like that. And in Russia, then at the one airport, they check your body by patting it down. And the woman was there. So I didn't speak Russian, but I indicated, no, I'm not going to mount. So I had to, but then they sent someone to come. I had to wait 15 minutes just for a male to come. But they understood the principle. That's as far as it goes in the West. But it's difficult. It's difficult that brahmacharis, they, in the summer in the West, the women are walking around without many clothes on. It's just normal. So it becomes very difficult. And they'll deal with you in a often you see, especially a brahmachari is a young man, and they have a little life in them. They're not battered down by maya like everyone else, so they may seem, they have confidence, and they may seem very attractive to women. So devotees have to be very careful. Maya has her test. Maya comes in so many ways. I mean, not just directly sexual form, but she may come as doubts. Why am I doing this? She may come as sickness, which it becomes more difficult to go on when we're sick. But yeah, the principal form is, or the grossest form, is direct sexual attraction. In America, there's one slang term. It's probably out of date now. One slang term for an attractively dressed woman. It's because there's so many ways they can, you know, earrings and jewelry. Actually, in the West, they don't use jewelry. Increasingly in India, also, women don't use. Previously, they used to use. But they have so many things, you know, lipstick, and toe polish, nail polish, eyebrow polish, I don't know, it's all different things, and lipstick, and powder for the face, hairs, different hair conditioners. In the house we were in that village, I saw there was some machine for straightening your hair. But then there's others for making your hair curly. So sometimes you want to make your hair curly, curlers, see. There's a machine to make your hair curly, then another time, we don't bother, we don't have hair. That's all. No problem with our hairstyle. But anyway, I was saying this term for an attractively dressed woman. And women, they can spend hours, literally, just dressing. Bathing, and then sitting in front of the mirror, combing their hair. Prabhupada, he said that in the fourth canto, one Prabhupada said it, combing the hair is one of the important things for women. You get some pleasure out of that. So all that to be attractive. And then they complain, they spend so much time dressing up to be attractive, and then they complain if someone rapes them. Funny thing. It's very strange. I can't understand that. Anyway, that slang term for an attractively dressed woman is doll. Doll. It's an interesting term, because what is a doll? A doll is just a lifeless imitation which is fashioned in such a way that it looks like something attractive, like a real human being. But then what is a real human being? An attractively dressed woman, it's just something which is made up to be attractive, but the real thing which is attractive is the spirit soul. However attractive a woman might be, dressed, maybe very young and beautiful and nicely dressed, but if she dies, then who will want to embrace the dead body, however otherwise attractive it might be? So beware, sadhu savdhan, be careful. Devotees, be careful. Maya is all around. She's all around and she's within also. But Krishna is also everywhere and within also. So it's just a matter of which way we look. We look toward Krishna or we look toward Maya. Prabhupada said that very brief and shocking and clear statement. You either love Krishna or you love the vagina. So You have to choose. Graphically put, which one do you want? Heavy stuff, right? But that's it. Prabhupada just put the whole endeavor of Krishna consciousness, just in a few words, put everything in perspective. That is it. What do we want? What do we want? So, yeah, well, congratulations also on being brahmacharis. How to go on? How to go on? They say. Well, if you're finding it so much a struggle, should I marry? Should I not marry? In such a case, better get married. And they say, well, why am I saying? When intelligently we can understand that it's better not to. Because if you're thinking about it, that means already you invited Maya in. And once Maya is in, then she takes over. Unless we can call out to Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Then again, of course, then again we can take shelter of Krishna. Of course, everyone struggles. It's not that the struggle isn't there. But if we're contemplating marriage, then already we're halfway there. That's why my Brahmachari book, there's a section called On Getting Married, and it starts off with, if you're thinking about getting married, stop thinking about it. Just don't think about it. That's best. Then you don't have a problem. Then you have a... Problems are there as long as we're in the material world, but the problem of thinking about money and social life and in-laws and so many things that divert our attention away from service. So, we won't be thinking of all these things if we're actually getting a higher taste in Krishna consciousness. Of course, higher taste is there, but we have to study and understand philosophically also. After the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, there's the 11th canto. So the 10th canto is the rich nectar of Krishna's pastimes. And in the 11th canto, we have extended philosophical sections because we're in this world and Maya is there, and it's not that we're just immediately coming up to the highest level of Krishna consciousness. So Maya is always testing us. So understanding the situation of this material world helps our intelligence to remain steady and not be bewildered by the attraction of Maya. I was talking about staying brahmachari for our own benefit, but for others' benefit also. I mean, Krishna consciousness has to be preached. And of course, everyone can do that. It doesn't depend on one's position as a brahmachari or grihastha or sannyasi or whatever. But brahmacharis are, again, they're free to do so. So you can do a lot of service. You should do a lot of service. The kamis are working hard for sense gratification. Devotees should work hard for Krishna. And from that, the higher taste comes also. We're talking about getting a higher taste. It doesn't come by sitting around thinking of Krishna Leela. We can, not that we shouldn't think of, we can think of Krishna Leela, but this is, preaching activity is Gaura Leela. It's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. The other day we were coming through that Uchal. There's one Talokan town, Uchal. So that reminded me of that verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Uchalila Prema Bandha Chodike Virai Stri Briddha Juba Balak Shabare Dubai. It's talking about the flood of love of God brought by the Pancha Tattva, which means Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivas. So the flood of Krishna Prem rose up, Uchalilo, and drowned and spread in all directions. It rose up and spread in all directions. And women, old people, youths, and even children, they were all drowned in that flood of love of God. So that is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela is going on. This preaching of Krishna consciousness is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela. Adapi hoji Leela kore gaura rai kono kono bhagyavane deki bare pai. Even today, those who are fortunate, they can see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes going on. So this spreading of the chanting of the holy names of Krishna everywhere, that is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastime. So thinking of Krishna Leela is very nice, but taking part in Gaura Leela, that's even better. Now, not that the two things are separate. We're distributing also Krishna book, Krishna Leela, Bhagavad Gita, all these books, chanting the holy names in public. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's own preaching program, to go out, chant Hare Krishna with the humility Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught. Trinada pisuni chena tarori vasa hishuna amanina amanadena kirtaniya sadahari. Holy name of Krishna should always be chanted. That is possible if one is thinking oneself lower than grass. Of course, yeah, that's an attitude to be cultivated. It's just the opposite of the demoniac attitude, which is Ishvaro Hum. I am the king. I am the greatest. But the devotee cultivates thinking, I'm very low. Tarariva Sahishnuna. This one should be tolerant like a tree. Srila Prabhupada said that this is particularly important for preachers, because preachers, they get insulted. Actually, not nearly so much as it used to be. In the beginning days of our movement, we had to take a lot of insults. And sometimes physical beatings and all this. Still you'll get... But you have to tolerate. That's all. Then amanina manadena. That's not wanting honor for oneself, because some people will blaspheme, and especially in India, many people will give respect also. So you have to be very careful of that. Even in the West, not the public, not so much, but among devotees, when someone becomes somewhat senior, then those who are more junior, they will respect. So that's a natural thing, and that is also wanted. Not that we become all impersonal and democratic, and you know, 30-year devotee is the same as a 3-day devotee. But one has to be very careful. If one is not in a mood of humility that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advises, then we're going to have problems. This. We've been talking about gross sexual desire, but there are more subtle desires also for honor, Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, amanina manadena. One should not desire to be honored. One should be prepared to give honor to others. But Maya, she comes in various ways. The desire for prestige, then that can, that will transform into, the subtle desire will transform into the gross desire, if it's not checked. That's why even sometimes you find that some people even now are, in India, are brought up in a manner that they're, you could, what you would call quite a decent upbringing. They're not subjected, I don't know now with the advent of the internet and everything, but at least until recently, they're brought up in a way that at least at home they weren't subjected to a lot of grossly sexual overtones, or their parents wanted to see that the children were quite what you might call decent or something like that. But even then, there's someone, they can have what you might call a good background without a lot of lusty desires, and come to Krishna consciousness, become honored, and it may be that even after becoming a brahmachari, they experience some sexual desire which they didn't have before, because they weren't subject to Maya in the form of honor. And once you start to accept that honor and think, yes, I'm very good, then that transforms. Just like karma transforms into krodha, it becomes, desire takes a more gross form as anger. So in the same way, subtle desire for honor, it gradually becomes grosser and grosser and comes to a level of sexual desire. So this is all these things we should study and know. This is what we might call Vedic psychology. Anyway, as I said, congratulations on your decision to take up this way of life. Those of you who have done, stick with it. There are many services to do in small temples, or even not even a temple, it's a preaching center. There's always lots to do, so that's good. You learn to do everything, and most important of all, imbibe the mood of surrender and doing whatever's required for pushing on the preaching. But time is also required. You have to study. It's also very important. So you should all study all day, preach all day, do lots of service, and somehow you have to balance it all. All right, Hare Krishna. That's all I'm going to say now, unless you have any questions about this. I think you need to keep your cloth a little clean. This is new cloth, huh? Relatively new. This is old cloth. Yeah. And we have to bang it. That's the old system, right? Banging the cloth to make it clean. Something like that. Because when you go out to preach, for ourselves we don't care. But when we go out to preach, people tend to judge you. First impressions. So they may think you're just some kind of beggar if you're dressed like that, and they may not realize the respectability and seriousness of the message that we have. So we don't dress extravagantly, but not sloppily also. I mean, I know I'm not myself a very smart dresser, but there, some minimal level should be there. Yeah, so you have a question. There's also torn cloth. Don't go out for preaching with torn cloth. Sew it up, or if it's too much, then get a new set, that's all. If you're on the farm, practically it doesn't matter what you wear. But when we're going out for preaching, we should, especially in the cities where there's the idea of dressing respectably like that, we should conform to that. Yeah. Even though the parents know there's no happiness in sexual life, why are they pushing you to get married? They're chanting, you said also? Chanting? Why do they push you? Why? Why do the parents push their sons even though they know? Well, it may be a case of they know but they don't know. They don't know anything else. They think, people say, they may think there's happiness, even though they don't experience it, but that's the nature of Maya. If you, there's that narration of the person is being chased by a tiger, and he's running and running, and then he doesn't see there's a cliff, so he falls over the cliff. You know what a cliff is? It means where there's a big drop. What's that called in Hindi? Ghat or something like that.
Edge of the mountain.
Yeah, on like the edge of a mountain. So he falls off and he's holding on. There's some root of a tree. And he's holding on to that. So he's just holding on, and the tiger is above him. And there's a huge drop below him. And even on a ledge just below, there's a poisonous snake just waiting to get him. And he's holding onto the root of the tree, but some rat is eating at it, so it may fall away at any moment. And bees are buzzing around him to attack him. So in all respects, he's in a dangerous situation. But the bees out of the tree, there's the nest, the bee's nest, and some honey is dripping, and it's coming on his tongue, and he's thinking, oh, it tastes so nice. So that is our situation. So people think, yeah, it's nice in material life. And why my son, why should he not enjoy that? And there's also the prestige factor, because people think they'll blame, materialistic people are always envious. So if someone's son becomes a sadhu, they'll say, you see, because you couldn't raise your child properly, there must be problems at home, so he wasn't happy, that's why he left. Like this. In material life, there's very strong pressure to conform. Everyone wants to be the same. If you don't do certain things, people think there's something wrong with you. Actually, in the West, there was a rebellion against that, starting in the 1960s, and don't conform. But then all the people started not conforming in the same way. They became hippies. And they all the same, long hair, flowers in their hair, like that. So, why they don't encourage you to be a brahmachari? Because they just can't imagine anything else. Anyway, don't worry about it. It's something that most brahmacharis have to go through. Initial disdain from their parents, not from your parents, right? Your parents are quite happy. Two sons and they're both brahmacharis. In some cases, the parents come and say, take our son, make him a brahmachari. But that always doesn't work also, because if the boy himself doesn't have the inclination, then You just can't possibly make someone a brahmachari. Anyway, always remember the goal of life is not to be a brahmachari, but to be a pure devotee of Krishna. But this is a... Being a brahmachari is a... It's a favorable situation to cultivate pure devotional service. If you get good association, that's necessary. Otherwise you can't be a brahmachari. It's very difficult. Unless there are others who are encouraging us, helping us, in the same mood. All right, Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Hare Krishna.
Which example? Oh, where the man is running and the tiger is chasing. Yeah, I believe that's in Bhagavatam. That's there, isn't it? Something similar in the forest of material enjoyment. It's a well-known analogy. I mean, well-known among people who are interested in spiritual pursuits within Hindu or maybe Buddhist traditions. I believe that's given in the Bhagavatam, yeah. But it's just maybe not a very big description. Because it's like many things in the Bhagavatam, they're just told in brief because it's expected that the people will know the broader context. Most of the stories in Bhagavatam, like that of Nrisimha Leela, they're told in more detail elsewhere. Bhagavatam is not really a storybook in the same way that, for instance, Ramayana or Mahabharata is. These stories are there, but just the essence is given usually. And then the devotional and philosophical ramifications are brought out. It's not really meant for storytelling as such, but it's meant for instruction. Okay, Hare Krishna.